From WNYC New York Public Radio, I'm Leonard Lopate. This is just one segment of the Leonard Lopate Show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
Rain Pryor is the daughter of one of the funniest men that ever lived, which doesn't mean that her childhood, as her father used to say, was a day at the beach. And yet, it hasn't prevented Miss Pryor from having an impressive career of her own. She's an award-winning actress, singer, writer, comedian, producer, and spokeswoman. In Jokes My Father Never Taught Me from Regan Books, she tells the story of her less-than-normal childhood and the difficulties that she faced as the daughter of the brilliant but deeply troubled Richard Pryor. I'm very pleased to welcome Rain Pryor to my show today. Hello.
Thank you. Hello.
How old were you when your parents divorced?
I was 6 months old when my father left my mother.
And when was the first time you met him?
I was 4 years old, and it was up at his house in the Hollywood Hills off of Sunset.
Had you been aware of his presence?
I knew that I had a dad, and I knew that he was famous. I didn't really know what those two things were, famous and a dad, yet, until I met him.
Did he come across as somebody you'd want to know more, or were your mother's negative opinions of him influencing?
Actually, no. When I first met him, it was like he was sitting on a throne, so immediately I was taken with him and just wanted to embrace him, and him as well as, you know, he embraced me.
And children always want to connect with their dads.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So why had their marriage failed?
You know, I think it was just, you know, my dad has never been a single woman kind of man. You know, there's seven children. You know, most of us all have different mothers.
Six wives.
Yeah, six wives. And
married two twice.
Yes, yeah. And, you know, dad was just, there's no way that I think he could have been, had single-minded purpose and just be with one woman. And it devastated my mother. But, you know, I'm thankful for her and her life that, you know, he ended up leaving.
Did he support you and your mother?
After, I mean, when I turned four, yes. In the earlier years, no, because one, two, my mom wanted to do it on her own and you know, because she was that type of woman, very independent. And then realizing during the 70s and 80s, having a mixed race child, how difficult that was going to be, needed to reach out to him for help.
She's Jewish.
Yes.
Were you raised with an awareness of your African-American heritage?
I definitely was raised. My mom, I like to say my mom was, you know, white and Jewish, but thought she was a black militant. So growing up with her, I definitely had the sense of black culture and black identity, as well as the Jewish culture and Jewish identity.
And that black militant side, I assume, is what led her to connect to your father in the first place.
Completely. I mean, my mom was very politicized, especially during the 60s and the movement of civil rights, and, you know, was one of the forces that led my dad also and encouraged him to have his own voice instead of the voice he did have, which was more Cosby-esque at first, which was to find his individual voice.
We'll get to that in a moment. Yeah. You had two older siblings,
yes.
Your brother Richard Jr., who was from his first wife.
Yes.
And your sister Elizabeth, who was from a girlfriend.
Yes.
And then your mother was the second wife.
Yes, my mother was the second wife.
Did he support the other kids, and did you have
Absolutely.
Any kind of relationship with your siblings?
I did after I turned 4 years old. It was the first time actually I met my brother and my sister. And from then on, you know, we would spend holidays with dad and summer vacations with him. And, you know, he was very much a part of our lives and we were very much a part of his.
What was his house life?
It was crazy. I mean, the house was filled, you know, you have your prostitutes and you have your pimps and you have your drug dealers and the drugs and the alcohol and everything's there. And every once in a while, maybe a celebrity, you know, and it was definitely an unconventional, dysfunctional household.
But could we have expected anything different? His mother was a prostitute. His
Absolutely.
Father was her pimp.
Absolutely.
His grandmother was the madam of the brothel.
Absolutely.
I mean, that probably is what he thought was normal.
But it was what he thought was normal. And so we grew up in that openness because it wasn't nothing that should be revered. It was sort of welcomed.
But still, seeing that and hearing all of the obscene language and watching the drug use, that had to have been a very odd education for a little girl.
I think it was odd in terms of, wow, you're inundated and at a young age you know what, four-letter words and you know about drugs and sex. I think, yes, at that time it is very odd, but I think it also definitely defined me as who I am today.
So well, do you think your father's treatment of women gave you a cynical view of men?
I think at times it does. You know, I think at times it definitely affected my interpersonal relationships as you get older, you know. But I also think you work through them. If you're smart enough, you want to work through them.
Did your mother remarry after the divorce?
No, she never remarried.
So, well, he obviously did.
Yes, yes. Not surprising.
Would you have preferred that, to have had another male role model other than your father?
You know what? I think I would have preferred to have the life that I do have. You know what I mean? I think had I not had them as parents, I wouldn't be who I am. So I definitely don't look back and have much regret on it.
My guest is Rain Pryor, who's written with the help of Kathy Crimmins, Jokes My Father Never Taught Me,
yes.
Life, Love, and Loss with Richard Pryor. It's published by Regan Books. You mentioned that he started off with a comedy act that was often compared to Bill Cosby. In fact, Cosby had been a role model for him. And he moved to California while he was still doing that kind of act.
Absolutely.
Why there?
I think, you know, people were telling him probably, you know, you're going to get a show or something, go to California, Hollywood, you know, is where you needed to be. And still he still had that, you know, Cosby-esque type of thing until he performed at the Aladdin one night and walked off the stage in the middle of a set realizing that's not who he wanted to be anymore. He had a deeper voice and a stronger voice, his own. And that's when he started to turn into the Richard Pryor that we know of.
But that was 1967.
Yeah.
There's the civil rights movement.
Absolutely.
There's protests against the war in Vietnam. Was he to some degree changed by the fact that he was in the 60s and felt that he was a little irrelevant?
Well, I don't think he ever felt he was irrelevant. I think what he felt was he had a deeper voice, and that what he was doing was mimicking someone else instead of being his authentic self. And my dad was always about truth and himself. And I think, you know, when you have people around you saying this is what you need to do if you want to make it, but inside he had a calling to do something else and to sort of be on the edge. And so he went for that.
Now, what was his act like when you first started seeing him?
When I first started seeing him, by the time he was the Richard Pryor that we came to know, you know. I remember seeing him at the Comedy Store and laughing and listening to other people laugh, and I'm like, well, that's my father, you know.
How long did your parents' marriage last?
It lasted for a couple of years.
And what eventually,
which is long for my father, actually.
What broke it up? Did he leave or she leave?
You know, what broke it up is that there was too much abuse. And what happened was he left. It was too much abuse and drugs. You know, my dad definitely was, you know, had an out of control lifestyle that a lot of people, if they're normal, can't keep up with.
Well, you mentioned the prostitutes and the drug dealers.
Absolutely.
And all that. But you also saw an awful lot of celebrities. Quincy Jones, Robin Williams, Diana Ross, people you met through your father. Were you aware that they were very famous? I mean, how aware were you of,
you know,
what,
I was,
of how this was a unique experience?
You know, as a young child, no, I wasn't aware. I mean, I was aware that Michael Jackson was Michael Jackson when I met him at, you know, at, I think it was my 10th birthday party at one time he showed up. I think then I realized, okay, my dad's famous, but my dad never really surrounded himself with the celebrities. They might have come to visit once in a while, but it's not what he hung out with. He usually hung out with the underbelly, what he knew and felt comfortable around was street people and that environment. So it was never something that I was terribly in shock and awe about until one day I met Eddie Murphy and ran through the house screaming, Eddie Murphy's here, you know.
You didn't realize that some people thought Richard Pryor was funnier and exactly. More important than Eddie Murphy.
Absolutely, absolutely.
He also helped people like Penelope Spheeris, who became a film director.
Absolutely. He helped start that career by asking her to work on his very first film ever, actually a film that my mother produced and gave the money for called Uncle Tom's Fairy Tales, you know, which then ended up getting shredded up as they had a huge, humongous fight. And all that was left was like, I think, you know, a couple of little scenes here and there.
Now, we wanted to start off by playing an excerpt from one of his hilarious bits, and we went to the records, and we found out that we could not do it because we just would have to bleep out too many words. Was that the way he talked normally?
Yeah, it was. You know, I think the thing is, my dad's use of language or four-letter words wasn't about, you know, for shock value. It really was a punctuation and a deaf and testament to the time and the era and surroundings in which he was growing up. You know, so it was kind of hard not to hear that growing up in the household constantly, you know.
But it must have been rough for you, too. First of all, you were with a single mother.
Absolutely.
A white woman with a black child. And I don't know when you became aware that your grandparents had advised your mother to put you up for adoption.
You know, it was later on in many years that happened. It really was my grandparents' side of the family that suggested it. And not because, you know, because of my race. What it was, you have to understand the time in which I was growing up. It was a difficult time to have a biracial child. No one understood it. There was still, you know, it wasn't that long after the civil rights movement. We were still going through it, Vietnam War. You know, there was so much pressure, and especially to be a single mother, white and Jewish at that time, is just so difficult to bear. You know, they wanted it to be easy for her.
When marriages break up, the kids often are put in a position where they have to choose sides. Your mother seems to have been the aggrieved one here. She came home from giving birth to you to find your father in bed with the maids.
Yes, like a prior.
And you even once walked in on him when he was with some strange woman.
Yes.
Did you judge him?
You know, I think there were times that I judged him when I found, you know, life to be too difficult, or he was in the press and why does everyone have to know about my life this way, or why are people talking about my life in a way that's not the reality of it, you know. But then I think if you're smart enough, as I hope I have been, is to grow through that and sort of accept, well, this is your life and this is your parents', you know, deal, not really yours. It doesn't reflect on you.
But he, when you were
absolutely
looking, when you were judging him, he'd say, "I'll come back when she's fun."
Right.
You know. So you're being forced to be nice.
Well, no, he liked the idea of having kids. You know, just not the responsibility of it. And when we started to develop, I think he began to appreciate us when we developed our own personalities. You know, for me, I was the kid in the family that could talk back to dad and tell him he was screwing up whatever it was. And so there grew a respect out of that, and the relationship began to change where he wanted us around. You know, he wanted us to be there with him.
Is it true that Miles Davis took care of you sometimes when you were little?
Yeah.
Was
actually,
he a good
we lived
babysitter?
Here in New York on 82nd Street in Amsterdam. Yeah. And yeah, I remember him playing the horn just to put me to sleep at night, you know, while my mom went out and danced, you know.
How old were you when the famous 1980 accident happened to your father?
I was 10 and a half years old when that happened. It was devastating. Devastating for me, one, the way in which I found out, which was on the way to school listening to the radio, and then the response of people. Kids can be so cruel because of what they hear from their parents. And that was really difficult, but also to know that my dad was suffering so much.
Well, some people thought it might have been a suicide attempt.
But it was. You know, that's what it turned out to be. And, you know, to have, you know, months go by and then finally see him and have him say to his own child that he wanted to end his life, you know, was pretty heavy, you know. And then at that point, too, again, my instinct is I want to take care of him and make it better so he doesn't feel that again.
And then you report that you attempted suicide when you were an adolescent.
Yeah, when I was 16 years old.
Now, yeah. It's remarkable how easily you're able to talk about all of this. What's given you this positive outlook?
I think you overcome it. I either think you stay stuck or you choose to evolve as a human being. And I think for my life, I've just chosen to evolve and accept it the way it is, because I think I think the message that I have is that you can get through it. You don't have to be a screw up. You don't have to be on drugs somewhere and strung out, and you don't have to waste your life away, that you can walk actually through this stuff and become a human being.
Wait, were you ever bitter?
I think I think in my adolescence, definitely I was bitter. I had a lot of trouble and a lot of anger and rage. And I think, you know, as I grew older, I sort of really wanted to change. I really believed that there was something bigger and better out there for me.
Then you watched your father go through a terrible diagnosis of MS.
Yes.
And a deterioration.
Absolutely, a very rapid deterioration, which isn't common for people with MS.
Usually
not everyone ends up
a
like
long
him.
Time.
Absolutely.
Do you think it's because he had abused his body so much?
You know, it has nothing to do with that, which I found really interesting. The diagnosis of MS or anything has nothing to do with the abuse he puts on his body, because there's other people who've lived completely healthy lifestyles that are just as bad as my father. So, you know, I what was difficult was to watch someone whose life career is to make people laugh and the movement and fluidity of his body and his voice all of a sudden have that stripped away from them.
he was in all these movies where he and every kid must have told you that they thought he was the funniest man in the world.
Of course.
Is that what tempted you to go into show business yourself?
Well, my parents knew from the time I was like five I was going to be in show business. You know, my dad gave me the rainbow colored Afro wig and Mr. Microphone. My sister got the trust fund. So it's like, this is what I was going to be. You know, I was going to be in show business. And he encouraged it. You know, he actually wanted me to be a stand-up. And I was like, there's no way I can be a stand-up. Do not realize who you are. So I developed my own way of being able to be a storyteller and to do what I do best.
But he got you a guest star appearance on Chicago Hope,
yeah,
didn't he?
With him, which was, you know, amazing. It's like, oh my God, I get to perform with my father, you know.
And then TV as well?
Well, I did a lot of TV. I was on a series when I was around 18 years old called Head of the Class. Did that for about 3 years, and then when I was in my 20s, did a show called Rude Awakening for Showtime, and continued to do theater throughout, and then recently created my own show within the last 3 years that's been touring the country, and I sing and sell CDs in the UK. You know, it's crazy.
And you have a one-woman show.
Yes.
Which is it called
Fried Chicken and Latkes? Yes.
Which I guess is a reflection of the two sides of your heritage.
Absolutely.
And is that, I mean, would you ever eat fried chicken with latkes? There's
a lot of
grease in that. You know?
I know. It's a good heart attack waiting to happen. But, you know, but I think it makes interesting for a Passover Seder.
How many siblings do you have all together?
There's seven of us.
And are you close to them all or
yes,
to the ones that you grew up with?
No, actually, I am close to them all. You know, it actually took to the last year of our father's death for us to really come together and unite as brothers and sisters, which has been the most amazing experience of my life.
And what's your relationship with your mother these days?
It's great. You know, I mean, we have a mother-daughter relationship. We talk, we don't talk, we yell, we fight, you know. I mean, the truth is she's my mom. So, you know, that's the way it's always going to be.
You're also an MS Lifelines ambassador.
Yes.
MS is one of those illnesses that seems to defy a cure, at least so far.
Well,
how close do you think they are?
You know, I definitely think we're not close enough. We're close, but not close enough. And really what it's about is finding how MS happens, why, you know, what causes MS. And that's where we're really trying to figure it out. And that's going to take some time. You know, it's definitely an insidious and sneaky kind of disease to have.
Rain Pryor's book, Jokes My Father Never Taught Me, The Love and Loss, Life, Love and Loss, with Richard Pryor. He wanted you to be a stand-up.
Yes.
Do you find yourself just kind of genetically, naturally funny at times?
I am genetically, naturally funny at times, but...
I can imagine growing up with him
and
as a father and not just having a weird take on the world.
Yeah, well, we definitely do. We definitely do. But as in terms of doing it as a profession, I don't think that's my path.
So we'll just laugh at home.
Yes, exactly.
Kathy Crimmins helped you write this book.
Yes.
She's the author of the memoir, Where is the Mango
Princess,
and numerous other books. This one is published by Regan Books,
yes.
And I want to thank you, Rain, so much for being with us
thank
today.
You for
That's
having
a very,
me.
Such a sweet photograph of you. Aww. Sitting on your father's shoulders
thank
on
you.
The cover.
Yeah, that's the kind of dad he was, you know.
Thanks for listening to the Leonard Lopate Show from WNYC, New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.